Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
And collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we will be talking about the rest of the types of hepatitis. If you remember, we talked a little bit about the chronic liver disease in season 10, but we really only scratched the surface.
That's right, Ron. And it was just kind of a little bit of a teaser show.
I guess. So on the earlier show, we discussed types A and C, which are usually spread through poor sanitation, contaminated food, water, and human waste, or sexual contact. And today, we will be talking about types B, D, and E.
We'll cover the rest of the alphabet another time. Mom, why don't you start us off with type B? Then I'll take type D. Ron, you can wrap it up with E. How does that work for everyone?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Works for me.
All right. So on to type B. Bravo. B for bravo, or B for boy. Type B hepatitis. The transmission for this disease, it's important to know that you cannot get hepatitis B from touching, kissing, drinking alcohol, food, water, air, or sharing cups and utensils. Hepatitis B is spread from blood, semen, and other body fluids when an infected person with the virus, their body fluid enters the body of someone who is not infected. This can happen through sexual contact, sharing needles, syringes, or other drug injection equipment, or from a mother to a baby at birth.
Or from a blood transfusion.
Or from a blood transfusion, right. HBV, which is abbreviated for hepatitis B, can survive outside the body and remains infectious for at least 7 days. So any blood spills, including dried blood, which can still be infectious, should be disinfected with a solution of 1 to 10 dilution of bleach to water. So that's 1 part bleach to 9 parts water. Gloves should be worn when cleaning up any blood spills. Not all people newly infected with the hepatitis B infection will have symptoms, but for those who do, symptoms can include fatigue, poor appetite, stomach pain, nausea, and jaundice, which is like a yellowy tint to the skin and eyes. With many people, hepatitis B is a short-term illness, but for others, it can become a long-term chronic infection that can lead to serious, even life-threatening health issues like cirrhosis or liver cancer. Risk for chronic infection is related to the age at infection. 90% of infants with hepatitis B go on to develop chronic infection, whereas only 2 to 6% of adults who get hepatitis B become chronically infected. So in other words, the younger you get hepatitis B, the more likely it's going to be a chronic, lifelong, serious illness. The best way to prevent hepatitis B is to get vaccinated.
Well, if there is a vaccine for hepatitis B, who should, you know, go ahead and get that vaccine?
There is a advisory committee on immunization practices, ACIP, and they recommend that the following people should get the hepatitis B vaccination.
Okay.
All infants.
Okay.
All unvaccinated children under age 19. All adults aged 19 through 59, and all adults age 60 or older who have risk factors for hepatitis B. And now I'll switch it back to Jean for type D.
Okay. Well, to start off, type D only occurs in the presence of type B. They're best buds.
Yep. I read about that. There's a connection between the two.
Mm-hmm. HDV is known as a satellite virus because it can only infect people who have already or also been infected by hepatitis B, or HBV. HDV infections can be acute or can be lead to long-term chronic infections or a long-term illness. The infection can be acquired either simultaneously at the same time that one is infected with HBV, or as a co-infection or as a super infection in people who already chronically are infected with HBV. It's not commonly found in the U.S., but hepatitis D is more common in Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, and the Mediterranean region. So it's kind of like all Europe.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe just not Northern Europe. The Middle East, West and Central Africa, East Asia, the Amazon Basin in South America. So it's kind of all over. And HDV is mainly transmitted through activities that involve percutaneous or punctures in the skin, and to a lesser extent through mucosal contact with infectious blood or bloody or body fluids. So like if you already have B,
right,
and you have sex with someone who has HDV, you could get it that way, okay, or through injecting a drug when you're sharing needles, syringes, or the drug preparation equipment at birth. To an infected mother, which is very rare, contact with blood from someone who's infected that gets into your open sores, a needle stick or exposure to sharp instruments, or sharing items like razors or toothbrushes with an infected person. And HDV is not spread through food or water or just general like utensils, breastfeeding, hugging, kissing, hand-holding, coughing, or sneezing.
Okay.
It has to be in the blood.
Okay.
And HDV causes infection and clinical illness only in patients, again, that have HBV. So if you have HBV, your healthcare provider will probably make you aware that you need to look out for HDV. And the signs and symptoms of an acute HDV infection are basically indistinguishable from those types with the acute viral hepatitis infection. So again, it's fever, fatigue, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, dark urine, clay-colored bowel movements, joint pain, and jaundice. And these signs and symptoms typically appear 3 to 7 weeks after you've been infected. And although there is not a vaccine for type D, if you get vaccinated for type B, that's protection enough. And since you can't get D without B, it'll keep you safe. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, it's as clear as mud.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. It does make sense.
Okay.
So if you're vaccinated against type B and you stay healthy and never get type B, you'll never have the risk of getting type D as a piggyback or satellite, as you called it.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
All right. So on to type E.
Okay.
So hepatitis type E, it's a liver infection caused by the hepatitis E virus, also known as HEV. And HEV is found in the stool of an infected person. It is spread when someone unknowingly ingests the virus, even in microscopic amounts. Hepatitis E is most common in developing countries with inadequate water supply and poor environmental sanitation. Hepatitis E epidemics involving large numbers of people have been reported in Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and Central America. People living in crowded camps or temporary housing, including refugees, and people who are internally displaced are at a particularly higher risk.
So now with everything that's going on
in Ukraine,
well, not only Ukraine, but like the Sudan, all the different areas where there's a great deal
of migration.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to be it's going to be a big problem in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger problem in the future.
Yeah.
Exactly. In developing countries, people most often get hepatitis E from drinking water contaminated by feces from people who are infected with the virus. In the United States and other developed countries where hepatitis E is not common, people have gotten sick with hepatitis E after eating raw or undercooked pork, venison, wild boar meat, or shellfish. And I think that's another reason why when you're cooking, you really need to read the directions on, you know, the temperature at which you're going to be eating some food.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In the past, most cases in developed countries involve people who have recently traveled to countries where hepatitis E is common. Symptoms of hepatitis E can include fatigue, poor appetite, stomach pain, nausea, and jaundice, like Leah was saying earlier, yellowing of the skin. Mm-hmm. However, many people with hepatitis E, especially young children, have no symptoms except for the rare occurrence of chronic hepatitis E in people with compromised immune systems. Most people recover fully from the disease without any complications.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there is no vaccine for hepatitis E currently available in the United States.
Okay. Well,
I guess that's another reason why if you're going to be traveling, mm-hmm. it might behoove you to see a travel medicine specialist before and after
right.
your travels, because right. they might recognize symptoms that you're having.
Or maybe you should get tested if you've been in an area that...
Yeah, but are you going to get tested for everything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Well, now that we've covered the various types of hepatitis, mm-hmm. the reason I was rushing this episode into our scheduling is that the latest news on hepatitis in children came out on April 18th and April 21st. The headlines read, "Why the CDC Issued an Alert on Liver Damage in Children."
Yeah, I saw that.
Following dozens of cases in Europe, 9 seemingly healthy kids in Alabama here in the U.S. mm-hmm. have contracted severe acute hepatitis with no trace of the viruses that typically cause the illness. So, in other words, they don't have hepatitis A, B, C, D, or E, mm-hmm. but they're getting
liver damage.
Okay. So researchers are investigating a possible connection between children infected with the... they're still calling it hepatitis because it's
inflammation of the liver.
Right.
Yeah.
Children infected with hepatitis and adenoviruses.
Okay.
And liver damage in children.
Mm-hmm.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advised physicians and public health officials this last Thursday to be on the lookout for pediatric patients with hepatitis from unknown causes. According to the advisory, a cluster of kids in Alabama in the Children's Hospital developed liver damage, liver failure in some cases, in conjunction with hepatitis and adenovirus infections. 9 children were identified between October of 2021 and February of 2022, all of whom tested positive for adenoviruses, which cause cold-like symptoms, diarrhea, sore throat, fever, and can lead to conjunctivitis, bronchitis, and pneumonia. Every patient also tested positive for hepatitis inflammation of the liver that can lead to not just the liver damage, but in worst cases, even death. And though none of the patients died due to their ailments, 2 of them required liver transplants. In light of these findings, the CDC is advising healthcare professionals to test for adenoviruses in pediatric patients diagnosed with hepatitis for unknown causes.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization was notified about similar cases in the United Kingdom earlier this month, where 74 cases of acute severe hepatitis with unknown etiologies were identified in the UK. The patients tested negative for hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E. However, some of the patients tested positive for SARS-CoV-2 and adenoviruses. The key point is this.
Mm-hmm.
The types of hepatitis that we just discussed were not to blame here.
Mm-hmm.
Laboratory testing has excluded hepatitis types A, B, C, D, and E, and D when applicable. In these cases, while severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus type 2, SARS-CoV-2, and or adenovirus have been detected in several cases, okay. So it may have a link to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization says further work is required to identify new cases internationally, mm-hmm. with a priority to determine the etiology or cause of the cases in order to guide further clinical and public health actions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and I guess,
Well,
and there are vaccines for adenoviruses.
Right.
But not all of them.
And for SARS now.
And for SARS. They're mainly limited to military personnel.
No, but SARS-CoV-2 or COVID.
Yes. And then also, if you're concerned, make sure that you and your family wash your hands with soap.
Right.
And wash them thoroughly, and help your kids to avoid touching their eyes, their nose, and their mouth with unwashed hands, which can be an issue with children. Right. And, again, wear a mask.
Yep.
That can help prevent a lot of things.
Yep.
And if you've been in close contact with someone who has found out that they're having, that they have hepatitis, and they're not sure as to... it's not a virus that caused it, you might want to, just make your healthcare provider aware of this so that they can keep an eye on your children. And we'll follow up with this as the news continues, and we'll keep you posted as far as what goes on with this.
I think so. We will post links for all of the information that we covered in this episode on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast and subscribe on Apple. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a health medical condition or a treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast. Till next week.